Thank you. Good morning, almost afternoon, everybody. I'd like to begin by simply thanking the Tri-Societies and the session organizers for the invitation to share this work with you. As you can guess from the title, and as was mentioned, what I'll be sharing is some work using data collected over some vineyard sites in California's Central Valley to evaluate a recently developed correlation-based approach to estimate the components of the of evapotranspiration, or to partition, I guess is a better way to say that, the components of evapotranspiration over the vineyards. And what I hope to show is that while there are some limitations with this approach, and we'll discuss those in due course, the results of the case study suggest that this is a robust approach that will give us accurate results. And so what I'm hoping to show here is that this is a useful approach not only for the research that I'm involved with, but also that it has a more general application for anybody who's looking to partition surface fluxes. Now, a lot of the information in the beginning here, Bill talked about this morning a bit. This is the same field site as Bill Kustis discussed with some of it in his part of his talk. So I'm going to go through this fairly quickly in the interest of time. The reason why we're interested in ET over vineyards in California comes down to two words, economics and sustainability. Basically, as water resources in that region become more scarce and demand increases, we need to develop improved techniques and improved tools in order to make sure that we are identifying when the vines need water, how much water they need, and make sure that we are using those limited water resources as effectively as possible. As Bill mentioned this morning, this project is all kind of fits together with a larger project referred to as GRAPEX, which is the Grape Remote Sensing and Atmospheric Profiling Experiment. It's been an ongoing study since 2013, really kind of with the two objectives. The first one is to understand the physical processes underlying ET and the effects of canopy structure, particularly in these very, very structured, very well-defined architecture of vineyards, how that influences those physical processes, and then also to build or develop remote sensing tools that will allow us to monitor ET and crop stress from the vines in near real time in order to make informed management decisions regarding irrigation. Again, Bill talked about a lot of this earlier, but just very quickly, we're going to focus on data collected at over two vineyards near Lodi, California. The two vineyards are identical in most respects. As Bill mentioned, they both have a nominal row spacing of about 3.5 meters. The trellis is about 2 meters, 2.25 meters high. The management practices are the same. The only real difference is that the north vineyard, referred to as Vineyard 1 here. Can I do this? Yes, I can. Vineyard 1 here is mature vines, while Vineyard 2 is younger vines. There are two things that I did want to point out regarding the management practices, because we'll see that they're important to recognize when we try to interpret some of our data shortly. The first one is that these vines are drip irrigated, and that applies a very limited amount of water right underneath the vines. And that's really the only source of water input into the system during the growing season. And during the non-growing season, during the winter months, the off-season, the vineyards are planted with a cover crop in the inner row space to help control water loss from the field. And you can actually see that fairly well in the photograph down here in the Vineyard 2. You can see the cover crop in between the row spacing there quite well. Lots of measurements were collected as part of GRAPEX. I'm not going to go into all of them. Let's just focus on what we're going to use, and that's primarily the meteorological and eddy covariance flux data, water vapor and carbon dioxide concentration data that's collected at 5 meters above the vines. In addition, for validation purposes, we're going to look at some sap flow data that was used and scaled to give us vineyard scale estimates of transpiration. And also during some very defined intensive observation periods, we also had a number of micro Bowen ratio systems that estimated soil evaporation, and we're going to look at that again in the context of validating our results from the partitioning algorithm. I can't go through all the mechanics of how the technique works, the algorithm works. I would refer you back to a couple papers by Todd Scanlon, but just to give you kind of a qualitative flavor of how this approach works, we begin by recognizing that the fluxes, the water vapor flux, latent heat flux, as well as the carbon dioxide flux, the total flux can be broken down or considered in based on two separate streams, two sources. The first of those is the processes that are stomatally controlled. So in that case, the water vapor would be the transpiration contribution, and the carbon counterpart would be the carbon uptake for photosynthesis. We could do the same thing for the non-stomatal components. And by recognizing that we can partition the fluxes that way, that means that we can also partition both the mean, so those concentrations the same way, as well as the variance, and consider the variance separately for each one of those source pathways. If we do that, and then we go a little bit further and recognize that based on similarity theory, the change in the concentration of those scalar quantities, in this case the CO2 and the water vapor again, due to turbulence, should be perfectly correlated based on, in theory, assuming that we don't have any large-scale processes impinging on our locally. So those would be things such as advection or entrainment, and also assuming that the distributions of sources and sinks for water and carbon are uniform and identical for both fluxes. If we make that assumption along with the information we already have, that implies that the correlation between the variation in water vapor concentration and the variation in carbon dioxide concentration, they should be perfectly anti-correlated. They should have a correlation of minus one. And in fact, we can go a step further and say that they're proportional to each other, with the proportionality coefficient is basically the water use efficiency. Going through a similar line of reasoning, we can also do the same thing for the non-stomatal contribution to the flux. In this case, however, if we look at the soil evaporation as well as the carbon from soil respiration processes, those should be, based on these assumptions, perfectly correlated. They should have a correlation of one, and that's kind of shown in the figure there, in the two sets of blocks. If we look at the total flux, then the correlation falls somewhere in between, and the correlation actually depends on the relative contribution of each of these source pathways. Once we have all that, we can do a whole bunch of algebra, and we get this really unwieldy-looking equation here. I am not going to go through all that. Just say that it's really unwieldy, and the way we actually solve this is through an iterative numerical process where we basically iterate through different potential values of the correlation between the carbon from non-stomatal and stomatal sources until we're able to get this equation to converge to a real answer. In the terms of our study here, we got a real answer about 60% of the time. We were able to get convergence about 60% of the time. There are a number of reasons that we identified for this. First of all, there are times when the contribution to the total flux from one or other of those sources, either transpiration or soil evaporation, is very predominant. And in those cases, we sometimes end up having a situation where the equations become computationally unstable. You have very small numbers that are divided by other really small numbers, and things just blow up. Also, for our initial evaluation that I'm sharing with you, we used a fairly simple, generic relationship to estimate our water use efficiency based on the meteorological conditions at the site. It's quite possible that using this general equation for water use efficiency, that it simply was not accurate enough to give us accurate numbers to put into that equation to get to get good results, to get conversions. And that's an area that we're actively pursuing to improve our estimates of water use over vineyards. And finally, there are times when those assumptions I mentioned earlier simply don't apply. There are periods when we do have some entrainment, where we do have free water on the surface due to dew formation or those sorts of things. And all of these can affect the ability of our algorithm to actually converge. One of the things that's nice, though, is by using the data that we were able to capture, we can develop these empirical curves, such as this one here, that shows us the variability of the flux partitioning over the course of the day. In this case, we're looking simply at the month of May to look at how it varies over time. We can use these relationships once we've developed them from when we were able to get a convergence to kind of gap fill, for lack of a better term, and create estimates of our flux partitioning throughout the day over the course of the year. If we do that, we see a number of clear patterns. In the case of the daily time scale, what we tend to see is that during the day we typically have a lower contribution to the total flux and transpiration, and that contribution increases through the course of the morning until we reach a maximum near noon or early afternoon. In the wintertime, this variation was from about 0.4 to about 0.6. Remember, that was the period when we had the grass cover crop. During the growing season, when the vines are well established, we go from about 80% of the total flux contribution, or total flux being contributed by transpiration early in the morning, and then by midday we've reached upwards of 88 or more percent. We also see that we have we see the seasonal variation. The one interesting point here is you do see that in April we have this. The proportion of flux that's contributed from transpiration, you actually go down a little bit in April. And that's the period where the grass is beginning to die off, and actually was mowed about mid-April. And we actually clearly see that in the signal that we get from our data. Now, if we take those results, those partitioning results, and try to validate them, we can do that using, as I mentioned, some sap flow data. And the figure there shows you the relationship between the observed flux and what we got from our partitioning algorithm, and they agree to within about 40 watts per square meter on average, which is about 15%. This actually pretty much falls within the uncertainty of both our eddy covariance data as well as our estimates of the transpiration due to the sap flow data. So this is. They agree, but we can really say they agree well. There is a fair amount of scatter, and that's likely related both to those uncertainty issues, particularly in terms of estimating our field scale transpiration from the sap flow data, because the uncertainty in our LAI estimates kind of propagate through and affect that. But overall, there is some scatter, but they do agree pretty much within uncertainty. And we see the same sort of thing when we look at the micro-Bowen ratio data. In this case, the results tend to agree to within about 30 watts per meter squared on an hourly basis, which is about 10%. So the model does seem to be able to reproduce what we observe at our sites, which is a very nice thing. So to kind of wrap this up, because we're running low on time, we did this case study here. We were able to use the partitioning algorithm to give us results that match up very well with our observations. There are some limitations to this approach that need to be further investigated, particularly improving the water use efficiency and how to deal with periods when the model can't converge because of other reasons. And that work is actually ongoing. And just to make this fit within my 15 minutes, thank you. Yes,
Marie. So you cannot really separate between the contribution of the interval graph and the canopy, right? Or can you?
We're assuming that, well, during the growing season, once that in a row, that grass crop has died back, because there's no really moisture input there, it's basically bare soil, so we're assuming that in a row space is bare soil at that point. Okay?
Thanks.
Thank you.